Psalm 35. Back when my parents lived in Richmond, Virginia, Tammy and I went to go see them, and we were there on a Sunday, and it was during the summer. And during the summer, there's a unique event in Richmond. There is a church that's downtown that is known as St. John's Church, where Patrick Henry gave his speech, "Give me liberty or give me death." And in the summers, what they do is they have a reenactment of this every Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock in the or 2:30 in the afternoon, if I remember the time correctly, that they would have this. And they would have several different characters that would sit out in the audience with everybody, and they would respond like people in a normal parliamentary type meeting would respond, and you have the whole speech go on. So we got done with the church service that we were in, and we were going to eat before we went to see the Patrick Henry speech. And we decided to go to Friendly's Restaurant. Now, I don't know if any of you know what Friendly's is. They used to have them in the area here, and they kind of disappeared. And I think they finally disappeared over COVID. I'm not sure. I know they're based out in Massachusetts, so I saw a few out there when I was there. But Friendly's is a restaurant where you go there. It's kind of like a Denny's or a Big Boy, but they're noted for their Sundays that they have at the end of the meal there, and it's Friendly Restaurants and their ice cream, and that's just a part of it. So I'd been to this restaurant on multiple occasions and the like, and so we went there and we had someone come. They took our order, and we were enjoying having a good time talking with one another, and we were beginning to look at our watch and beginning to go, okay, if they don't get the food out here, we're not going to make it to this Patrick Henry speech if they don't come out soon. And so we were waiting for our waitress to appear, and never appeared, and never appeared, and never appeared, and never appeared. And like, well, we really got to get this going here, because if we don't, we're going to be in trouble here. And so my dad, which was unusual to his character, and it's really unusual to mine, goes back and went back to the back area. And he kind of walked into the area where the cooks are at, and he's just like, where's our waitress? We're kind of waiting for our meal. And they looked at Dad blankly, and they just said, well, your waitress isn't here anymore. She's gone. And we're like, well, we've ordered food, and it's not here yet. And they're like, oh, well, you haven't, you know, and they began to look at things and realize nothing had been prepared for us yet. And so we got very delayed service. But they were very quick when that happened, and we ate and barely touched the food, and we ran out the door to make sure that we made it to Patrick Henry's speech, and we did. And he said, give me liberty or give me death. So it was a good replay of all the things that went on there. But, you know, it was frustrating to get the delayed service. You know, you sometimes wonder, you know, when that happens, you know, do I tip the person well or at all? Was it their fault? These type of things. But we didn't even have that question because our waitress wasn't even there. So these type of things do frustrate in life when we have delays. But what you have in Psalm 35 is what the psalmist feels like is a delay on God's part. Kind of these psalms that we've dealt with here, these five psalms, which we're getting to the end of looking at psalms. We'll be looking at Ephesians starting next week. Pastor Brian is going to be preaching from that. But we've got this five set that we've kind of had this repeated thing of delay over and over again. And it just seems like at times from our perspective that God delays what he's doing. This is a psalm, if you've already just kind of taken a quick glance at it, you go, okay, it's 28 verses, so it's, you know, in the kind of mid-range as far as length, but it is one that repeats itself time and time again. If you just want to get an outline here, when you read through it again, it's a very easy outline to find if you even miss it. But verses 1 through 10 is the first part. Verses 11 through 18 is the second part, and then verses 19 to 28 is the third part. And you go, how do you know that? Well, each of the sections starts with some kind of an attack that David is undergoing that he then asks the Lord to act, and then at the very end of that section, he has some sort of hope. And he's just, you know, excited about what the Lord's done. And then you get back to the next verse, and it's talking about another attack that David's suffering. And he's calling upon God. You've got to respond. But he also responds at the end with this hope that God is going to answer and that he does do those things. And it does this three times. So verses 1 through 10, verse 11 through 18, and 19 through 28, that is the three sections. I mean, you go and look at any commentary or anything, they go, this is the way this psalm breaks up because of that arrangement, each one of them ending with a hope passage that's a part of it. So let's just go ahead and read through this psalm. We've got the 28 verses here that we'll go through and then just kind of break up the three sections and look at them specifically. This is a psalm of David. It says this, "Plead my cause, O Lord, with them that strive with me. Fight against them that fight against me. Take hold of shield and buckler and stand up for mine help. Draw out also the spear and stop the way against them that persecute me. Say unto my soul, I am thy salvation. Let them be confounded and put to shame that seek after my soul. Let them be turned back and brought to confusion that devise my hurt. Let them be as chaff before the wind. Let the angel of the Lord chase them. Let their way be dark and slippery, and let the angel of the Lord persecute them. For without cause have they hid for me in their net in a pit, which without cause they have digged for my soul. Let destruction come upon him at unawares. Let his net that he hath hid catch himself into that very destruction. Let him fall. And my soul shall be joyful in the Lord. It shall rejoice in his salvation. All my bones shall say, Lord, who is like unto thee, which deliverest the poor from him that is too strong for him? Yea, the poor and the needy from him that spoileth him." New section, verse 11. "False witnesses did rise up. They laid to my charge things that I knew not. They rewarded me evil for good to the spoiling of my soul. But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled my soul with fasting, and my prayer returned into mine own bosom. I behaved myself as though he had been my friend or brother. I bowed down heavily as one that mourneth for his mother. But in mine adversity they rejoiced and gathered themselves together. Yea, the abjects gathered themselves together against me, and I knew it not. They did tear me and ceased not. With hypocritical mockers and feasts, they gnashed upon me with their teeth. Lord, how long wilt thou look on? Rescue my soul from their destructions, my darling from the lions. I will give thee thanks in the great congregation, and I will praise thee among much people." And here's the new section again. Starts off the text. "Let not them that are mine enemies wrongfully rejoice over me, neither let them wink with the eye that hate me without a cause. For they speak not peace, but they devise deceitful matters against them that are quiet in the land. Yea, they opened their mouth wide against me and said, Aha, aha, our eye hath seen it. This thou hast seen, O Lord. Keep not silence. O Lord, be not far from me. Stir up thyself and awake to my judgment, even to my cause, my Lord and my, or my God and my Lord. Judge me, O Lord my God, according to thy righteousness, and let them not rejoice over me. Let them not say in their hearts, Ah, so would we have it. Let them not say, We have swallowed him up. Let them be ashamed and brought to confusion together that rejoice at mine hurt. Let them be clothed with shame and dishonor that magnify themselves against me. Let them shout for joy and be glad that favor my righteous cause. Yea, let them say continually, Let the Lord be magnified, which hath pleasure in the prosperity of his servant. And my tongue shall speak of thy righteousness and of thy praise all the day long." What you find in this first section, the first 10 verses, is a statement of this, that the Lord sometimes delays deliverance from physical assaults. The Lord sometimes delays deliverance from physical assaults. You start the psalm off, and he does use terms that there's a battle taking place. He says, plead my cause with them that strive with thee. Fight against them that fight against me. There's a war taking place, and when you have a war like this, you're seeking the death of somebody else. And so David cries for protection. He asked the Lord just simply to start off, take hold of the shield and buckler. What's a shield and a buckler? Well, a shield would have been a door-like shield, a shield that you could actually stand behind. It looked like a door. A buckler, on the other hand, was a smaller one that was used for protection and closer. But he just says, take up both of them. Now take up the large shield, take up the small shield, and then take up this. Verse 3, draw out the spear. And we don't really get it in our language, but the same word for spear is there as the verb. Stop the way against them, or spear the way against them is what it should be. That you have that spear and you set it in place and you don't let them go any place closer to me because the spear is in the way. That you use this. And so he is in a battle for his life that he realizes he needs help. If it's anything connected with the previous passage, remember Psalm 34 was where he was completely surrounded by Philistines on every side. He'd gotten himself into a difficult situation. And when he got away from the Philistines, who's he surrounded by? He's surrounded by people that are chasing him at the orders of Saul. People that are seeking his life, that were doing this. And so he cries for protection. And you see through verses 4 through 8 that David prays something that almost sounds unchristian to pray. He is almost as it's described in some passages, that he prays an imprecatory prayer. You're going, what is an imprecatory prayer? A prayer that's asking for judgment or punishment on people who do evil. You know, well, that doesn't sound Christian, but there are occasions where you desire that God would stop certain evil people. It's not that we're asking God, you know, we go and say, well, they're doing evil, but I'm going to be kind to them and ask for blessing on their soul. No, you're going to ask an occasion that God stops those people. I mean, it's good and right, because if you've got any sort of righteousness and justice in your soul and you see them persecuting and hurting people, you're going to say, Lord, stop them. And if you note it as you just mark through in your Bible, you see in verse 4, let them, and then in verse 4 again, let them, verse 5, let them, verse 6, let their way, and let the angel, verse 8, let destruction come upon him. Let his net that he hath hid catch himself. What he's saying is, Lord, do this. Get them caught in some of the things that they have been doing. You look at the statement in verse number 7. There is, verse number 6. You have the statement, let their way be dark and slippery. Let the angel of the Lord chase them. There's some reason why, or this is one of the reasons why they kind of think that Psalm 34 and Psalm 35 are to be taken together, because in Psalm 34, it talked about the angel of the Lord in that passage. The angel of the Lord is only used twice in the Psalms. Psalm 34, 35. It's never used again in any of the Psalms. In that case, in Psalm 34, David asks for, or makes the statement that the angel of the Lord encompasses or is like an army surrounding him. In this case, he asks that the angel of the Lord chase them. Now, you go, who's the angel of the Lord? In most cases, you look at it, it's probably an appearance of Christ. An Old Testament appearance of him, and sometimes visibly, that he would show up and appear and the like. But David is just simply saying, Lord, show up. You come and do the battling. You come and show yourselves to these individuals that they see that you're there, and let them feel like they have no safety. It's like the angel of the Lord, as you have this in verse number 4, it's talking about this. Let them be turned back to confusion. Let them be like chaff before the wind. You say, what's chaff? It's dust. And this wind blowing them along, it goes wherever the wind blows it. Verse 6, let their way be dark and slippery. You go, what's that? It's like they're trying to run. They're confused. They get into a dark place. It's like standing on wet rocks, slippery rocks. And what you have here is he's just saying, don't let them get any footing. Don't let them gain any traction in their fight. You know, you need strong ground underneath your footing. In this type of warfare where you use spears and swords and the like, you needed good footing. And he's just simply saying, Lord, don't give them good footing. Don't let them see what's going on. Make them confused. Make them turn back from their attacks that they have upon me. These individuals are ones that, well, David's not really sure why they're doing this. Hey, look at verse 7. Without cause they hid for me their net, and without cause they have digged for my soul. I mean, this could very well have been said about Saul. I mean, think about why Saul was chasing David over the countryside. Is there any real reason for it? I mean, other than maybe Saul was jealous, which that is obviously one of the reasons that he eyed David once he heard this song, David is slain, or see, Saul has slayed his thousands and David his tens of thousands. He heard that song and it made him upset. But was there any cause on David's part to warrant a death sentence upon his head? Absolutely not. And so for him, he's going, I'm doing this and I'm battling against an individual that there's no real cause for them to fight me, but they are. They're trying to seek my life. And in part of this imprecatory prayer, he just says, well, Lord, give them retribution in the same way that they have attacked me. Let it be reflected back on them. Say, for instance, verse 7, without cause, they have hid for me a net in a pit, and they dig this out for my soul. Well, verse 8, let destruction come upon him unawares. Let his net that he hath hid catch him into the very destruction. Let him fall, that pit that he had dug, let him fall into it. Lord, let them experience a little bit of what they are putting me through for them to understand what is going on. As you look at verse number 8, there is an interesting statement. That idea of destruction and destruction is the Jewish word that's used for the Holocaust. That he's just simply saying, you say, what was a Holocaust? It was a complete destruction, a ceasing of a line that Hitler was attempting by his Holocaust. Well, what this individual is looking for, the ceasing of David's life. David's just simply saying, Lord, would you reflect that back if fitting that you would take care of this? You get to the end of this section where he's just asking, Lord, I need help, and the enemies are on every side. You've got to stand up and do this and this and this because they are being mean and cruel and violent. He ends it in verse number 9 and 10 with this statement of praise. He says this, my soul shall be joyful in the Lord. In his salvation, he'll rejoice. When the Lord delivers, he'll do this. All my bones shall say, Lord, who is like unto thee which delivers the poor from him that is too strong for him? Yea, the poor and the needy from him that spoileth him. You think about this, David is going against an enemy who's got a national bank account behind him and a national army supporting him as Saul chases him across the countryside and all over the place. And he's just simply saying, I'm not strong enough to fight an army. And many times David was by himself. Other times people joined him in his faithful band, but they weren't able in their own strength to fight these armies off. And David knew that, and he just said, I'm not able to do this. But as you read through 1 Samuel chapter 22 and all the way to the end of the 1 Samuel, you find David escaping. Now, on one occasion, he's going on one side of the mountain as Saul goes around on the other side of that mountain. Other occasions where you have a good sleep falling upon the army of Saul as David is nearby. I mean, this type of thing that happens where God protects David time and time again, and he realizes it would have been a battle I would have lost if I had fought against Saul. Now, he wasn't going to raise his hand against the God's anointed. That's why he's saying to God, you need to take care of this. For multiple reasons, I can't deal with this, but I have this enemy who's going against me. But when I see your deliverance, I am just going to simply say, what a great God you are who's able to deliver a person with no resources from the hands of an individual who has everything, that you're a God that can do that. So David, from the start, is just starting off with this whole statement that he has suffered attacks physically and that he is looking for the Lord to deliver, and he would like the deliverance to happen right now. It's not happening. The Lord is delaying it in his perfect planning. The judge of all the earth will do right, as we learned last week in Genesis 18. His time is right when he gets to dealing with things. But David's going, please, I need that help. And when you do answer, I will respond with praise. So you have this first section where you have the Lord sometimes delays deliverance from physical assaults. But the second section is this, that the Lord sometimes delays deliverance from false accusers. Okay, not just physical attacks, but you have these false accusers. Verse 11, it sounds like now we're not going from the times where David is being attacked physically, but when he is just living a normal life and you have a courtroom scene now. Verse 11, false witnesses did rise up. They laid to my charge things that I knew not. It was a court of law, and the way it worked back then is that in oftentimes major cities there you would have in the gate individuals who were judges. That it would just be their responsibility to make decisions. And what you would oftentimes do is that you would gather witnesses either coming through the gate at times in a court case to witness what transaction was about to occur, or you'd have witnesses gather and make an accusation before this judge at the gate. And David just simply says, there was a time where this has happened, where an individual's, not just a single individual, but a group of individuals got together and charged me with stuff I hadn't done. I was falsely accused. I hadn't done any of these things. And the hard thing for him was that this was an individual or individuals that David had been kind to. And that's what he's describing as he goes through in verse number 13. He said, for me, I mean, here these people are trying to get money out of me. They're trying to take evil on me for, it says there, rewarded me evil for good to the spoiling of my soul. They're looking to basically drain him dry of anything that he has. But verse 13, David says, but it was for me when they were sick. Okay, here these people had their time where they weren't doing well. Here's what David does in response to this. My clothing was sackcloth. You know, he gets into official mourning mode. He's crying before God and he takes on the sackcloth and he's wearing this and he's fasting to show that he's in earnest that God would answer for the safety of this individual or individuals, that they would be healed. He'd been praying for them. He'd been looking for God to do good. In verse 14, I behaved as though he had been my friend or brother. I bowed down heavily as one that mourneth for his mother. He goes, I was having a response to this as I would for my mother in a loss for her. I was praying for him that the Lord would take care of him. It was my burden. I took it upon me to pray for him. Yeah, well, verse 15, but in my adversity, they rejoice. They gather themselves together. I mean, they have no mourning when David's doing badly. In fact, they're throwing parties. It's not the house of mourning for them. It's the house of rejoicing, the house of partying. They're excited when David is doing bad. They gathered themselves together against me. I knew it not. They did tear me and cease not. And the idea of tearing is, you know, it's focusing on the teeth. And you think about it, what do most people in our culture destroy each other with? It's not physically assaulting people with their teeth, but their teeth chatter. They do a lot of talking and they rip and shred individuals with their mouth. And as they get together, they're just ripping and shredding David's character. They're doing this. David had shown kindness, but these individuals were gathering themselves in mob action, and David, he's just shocked by this. In verse 16, these hypocritical mockers in feast, they gnashed upon me with their teeth. He's just simply saying, here these people had a good mask on one occasion when I was doing good to them and praying for them and that, but as soon as the circumstances flipped around, they were the ones who were leading the charge in the abuse and the assault on my character. One has described it this way. Just think of that story of the good Samaritan who goes and helps the man alongside the road and takes care of him. And then as he returns back up that road, he's assaulted and he finds out that he's been assaulted by the very man that he helped to heal. You kind of go, that's the situation here? Yeah, that's the situation here. David had done what he could for this man when he wasn't doing well and these individuals when they weren't doing well, but when he gets into difficulty, they're leading the charge for his destruction. And so David is just simply saying this, there's individuals making up all sorts of stuff about me. They're attacking my character. I'm not sure why. Verse 17, how long, Lord, wilt thou look on? Okay, I don't have a public defender. I need one. I need a lawyer now that will stand up and defend my case. Rescue my soul from their destruction, my darling one from the lions. Me, as you know, he's picturing these, you know, snapping teeth, these lions that are looking to tear me apart. And then verse 18, he acknowledges this, I will give thee thanks in the great congregation. I will praise thee amongst much people. Now, even in the midst of all this, I will praise you, but if you, you know, also stand up and respond, I'll give you the glory that you're due. I mean, I'll do it all the time anyways, but I will go and make sure that people know what kind of God you are. Even though this situation's come up, I know you will deliver. And when you deliver from this, I will let people know. But David feels the sense of delay on this one. Now, how long, Lord? How long are you going to let them chomp their jaws at one another and destroy my character? Will you not do something? But Lord, I know you will, and I'll praise you. But from my perspective, I feel like you're delaying. So you have the Lord sometimes delays from physical assaults. Sometimes he delays in his deliverance from false accusers. But what you see in verse 19 through 28, and I'm just going to put it this way, that he sometimes delays his deliverance from gloating attackers. You see in verse 19 that these individuals are prideful. Let them not, or let them that are mine enemies wrong, or let not them that are mine enemies wrongfully rejoice over me, neither let them wink with the eye that hate me without cause. You go, the idea of winking is what? There's this idea that I know that I'm untouchable. You know, wink, wink. I can get away with this. I mean, they are ones that hate me without a cause. Verse, as you see this, they speak not peace. They wrongfully rejoice over me. Verse 19, as you read this, is oftentimes partnered with Psalm 69 and verse 4. Psalm 69 and verse 4 makes this statement, they that hate me without a cause are more than the hairs of mine head. They that would destroy me, being mine enemies wrongfully, are mighty. Then I restored that which I took not away. I mean, what you have here is a statement that you have individuals in this world that are going to hate you and feel like that they've got the complete advantage over you. Some have taken this passage and looked at it, and they think that the Lord is using this in John chapter 15 when he talks to his disciples. He makes this statement in John 15 and verse 18, if the world hate you, ye know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were not of the world would love his own. But because you are not of the world, I have chosen you out of the world. Therefore, the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord. If they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they have kept my saying, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me. If I had not come and spoken unto them, they had not sinned, but now they have no cloak for their sin. He that hateth me hateth my Father also. If I had not done among them the works which none other men did, they had not sinned. But now they have both seen and hated me, both me and my Father. But this will come to pass, that the word might be fulfilled that is written in their law, they hated me without cause. Kind of going, where is that from? You go back and you have that verse 7, that this idea is that they're doing this without cause. But in verse 19, you have this same statement. They have hated me without cause. I mean, think about what the Lord did when he came to earth. He wasn't doing evil. He was actually helping people in their worst distresses. People were blind, lame, had sicknesses, demon-possessed. He's going through all the communities and healing people regardless of who they were. He's just healing them. And you'd say, well, he's doing good. But you had a whole group of people that even with those healings that they received and those blessings that they enjoyed for their family as Jesus walked through their communities and taught them, that they hated him who did good beyond measure of any human being. He did good beyond anything that mankind had ever done before. They hated him. Lord just simply reminds his disciples, if they hated me without cause, he hadn't done anything mean. He hadn't done anything cruel. In fact, he had done the exact opposite of that. If they hated me without cause, guess what? You're going to have people in this world that hate you without cause. Just because you're a Christian and you're kind to them, as David has already showed, he's the type of person who would pray for his enemy, do good to them, truly do good to them, because he was in mourning and sackcloth. He did good to them, but they hated him. So you have in this passage, just remember the fact that there are going to be individuals that hate you without cause, because we live in the world. We talked about the world this morning. We live in a culture that is going against God in every way, shape, and form. And if you're the type of individual that is actually standing up, I mean, I didn't see Sodom really getting mad at Lot. Other than the fact that one time he said, no, I'm not going to allow you to abuse my guests. But beyond that, it doesn't seem like Lot was a person who had done anything to kind of rock the boat there in the city of Sodom and what they did and what they believed. But if you live in the world and you actually stand up against what they're doing because they're hurting themselves, they're destroying themselves, they're damaging their families, they're damaging their community, they're hurting each other, and you stand up and say, no, that's not right. There's a way that's right. There's a good way. And you stand up and do that. Guess what? You're going to be hated. So just as the Lord was hated without cause, so his followers that he leaves in the world when he goes back and ascends to heaven, he leaves them here. You're going to be just hated as much as he was. I mean, they rejoice over this. They gloat over the fact that they can embarrass Christians. And what David prays for is that just simply the Lord would reverse the situation. Verse 22, and it's like, and as you read this in the Hebrew, it's kind of like one shot after another. It's very quick. But these different things, thou hast seen, Lord, keep not silence, be not far from me, stir up thyself, awake to judgment. I mean, that is one thing after another. Lord, please, we need response from you. Judge me, verse 24. Let them not rejoice over me. Let them not say in their heart, and let them be ashamed and brought to confusion. What you have here is, again, asking for a reversal. I mean, these people, when they have the opportunity to go after Christians, are, in a sense, they are clapping. You find there that in their statement in verse number 25, they say this, "Ah, so we would have it. We have swallowed them up." Their delight is that they're excited that they get to chomp on Christians. That brings them delight. Followers of God, to be able to do that. And what David's just simply saying, could you reverse that? That their rejoicing and their gloating would be the reverse of that, that they would not be. You get to the end in verse 27 and 28, and David just simply says this, "Let them shout for joy and be glad that favor my righteous cause." Those that are followers of God are the ones who are righteous, the ones who have put their faith and trust in Him. God gives them a righteous standing, as we looked at this morning. Lot and Abraham both have a righteous standing before God. And what he's simply saying is, give cause for those that are righteous to have reason to rejoice. Do something in this way, that you show your favor to us. And that way we can say, "Let the Lord be magnified, which hath pleasure in the prosperity of His servant," that God does something and you can look at Him and go, "Look at what God has done." In this case, what David said started off with, that he was poor and needy and weak, and he's just simply saying, could you do something where you could show your prosperity in me? Not that he's looking for prosperity and wealth, but he's just saying, make my case that I'm not like that, so people can go, look at what that person was like and what God has done to change his circumstances. Look at how God has delivered him from his enemies. David promises this, "My tongue shall speak of thy righteousness and thy praise all the day long." We don't have time to go through this here this evening, but if you look at some of these psalms that you have, there are 14 of them that actually give occasions, what are connected to occasions in David's life, and you read many of those psalms that are in difficult circumstances, and David's praising God, even despite the fact that the circumstances aren't quite going right. From a human perspective, David is going, "Lord, answer, respond. It seems like you're delaying. My flesh is going, please hurry up. But even in my waiting, I'm still going to praise you because it's still true about you. Everything that we find in the scripture is still true about you. It hasn't changed. That you're all knowing, that you're all powerful. That you're infinite in all of your ways, that you're gracious, that you're kind. You're God who can't look on unrighteousness, that the eyes behold the righteous and the evil." He sees both. And you say, what does that mean? Well, he's going to respond to the righteous and he is going to respond to the wicked. The righteous, he is going to respond ultimately with good towards them, and to those that are doing evil, he's going to respond with judgment, justice towards their actions and their activities. And David just simply said, even though I feel like you're delaying, I'm still going to praise you because I know it's still true. So for you, I do not know what your position is, and I think at times we come to a passage like this and we do get a little bit ho-hum about the fact of, oh, physical assaults, those don't happen here in the United States and the like. There's a whole section of our world where this is the case. I mean, they're actually facing physical assault for being Christians. You read stories in Africa and the central portion of Africa where there's all these battles between the Muslims and Christian sections of countries, and you have executions and torture taking place. You go to other regions of the world and Christians are physically assaulted. There are at times in court cases brought, accusations brought against them that even the judge is corrupt to believe what is going on without investigation. And they may very well feel like this, "Lord, I'm doing what's right and you're delaying in your response to these people." But you find when you read those stories, those people are the ones who are praising God the most. Despite the fact that they're being abused and assaulted by people who at times they thought were their friends. now have turned into ones who have turned against them or traitors. And for them, they read a passage like this and go, you know what? I'm not the only one who suffered, in their opinion, a delay on God's part. But they can read the story of David and realize time and time again all the times that God delivered and how God took care of David. And they can go, you know what? You did that for David. I know you're going to do it for me. Praise be to you. And we ought to reflect that in our life. We don't have the major things here, but we do have, I was thinking about this in the middle section there, we do have people that jaw on us, that say stuff about us, and it's not right. They lie about us. They lie about our character. And even that, you just say, Lord, deliver me from that. It's not true. I can't prove any of this stuff because I don't have the ability to gain a hearing with these individuals. Even if they would give that to me, they wouldn't believe me. Lord, you've got to step up and defend me because I can't. But in all of that, we should still, as David does on the three occasions where he ends and he goes, I will still praise you, though I feel like you're delaying your response. I know that you will respond. It's just my flesh doesn't like the wait. So may we be like David, rejoicing in our God, even though at times it feels like he may be delaying, he will eventually serve and minister and do what he can to respond as he should. Lord, we thank you. Thank you for the testimony of David, the trials that he went through that are teaching times for us. And though we don't face physical assaults right now, it may very well become the regular norm in our culture to have that type of activity be a regular feature of the world that we live in here in the States. It is true that we do suffer at the hands of individuals that say all sorts of untrue things about the positions and the stances that we take. Even people we've shown kindness and charity to are sometimes the very first ones to assault us verbally. Lord, in those attacks and those assaults where we know that we can't respond, vengeance isn't ours, we're not the one to be carrying that out. Help us to be patient, to wait for your timing on when you're going to take care of some of these things. But in the midst of that, may we still praise you, magnify you, lift you up to be seen. To people who don't want to see you at times, but for the sake of some that are looking for a hope, they're looking for something and or someone to hold on to and to grasp in their difficulty, may we be the ones that by our praise and testimony are showing people that there is hope. And it comes in you and your Son. So Lord, as we look at this psalm and are reminded, may we praise you at all times. And rejoice in knowing that though salvation or deliverance from our troubles seems to be delayed, it will ultimately happen. Heaven will give us a chance to rejoice and be reminded that sometimes we may have been individuals who were unhappy with your timing, but in that occasion we'll probably see how you worked out your own perfect will. How you were a good God and doing some things behind the scenes that we didn't even know about. But help us right now in the difficulty to still praise you, to still see you when we're attacked, assaulted, and abused. So thank you, Lord, for this passage. May it be encouragement to us. We love you and your Son who gives us the hope beyond the trials of this life. And in your Son's name we pray. Amen.